Coming up on Life is a Festival.
Steps to your own private ofrenda. Today, tomorrow, you know, get out a candle. If you think about it, when they arrive, they just came from a long way away. So when they arrive, they're thirsty. You have a glass of water in there. I like to put chia, mint, you know, they want a little something. And maybe they need a little drink, you know.
Mezcal.
Tequila.
Tequila?
In this town, we're tequila.
Okay.
And we put something on the altar, on the ofrenda, for them to just have a sip. And you then have a little toast with them. Now, here's where I get multicultural with it. You know, if your buddy or the person you're celebrating, you used to always have a michelada, or maybe you had a margarita, or maybe you had a Bud Light. Don't be afraid to put that on the ofrenda. You're calling back the memory. You're calling back that person that we lost.
My name is Eamon Armstrong, and this is Life is a Festival. This podcast is a celebration of thinkers and leaders who live their lives with the open-hearted, experimental joy of a festival. Each week, we converse in complete openness, in an ongoing quest to find those boundaries in our being and melt them into lofty horizons. Life is a festival, only to the wise. Welcome to Life is a Festival. I am here in San Miguel de Allende in Mexico, and in order to find a nice quiet place to record this introduction, I'm actually in a room in Claudia's home across from her ofrenda, her altar for Day of the Dead, with a candle. And actually, it's just me and this altar and this candle as I tell you about the episode you're about to enjoy, which is, of course, about Día de los Muertos, or Día de Muertos, depending on what you prefer. Today's episode is with Claudia Oliver. Claudia is the co-founder and producer of a festival in San Miguel called La Calaca, which is a Day of the Dead festival. It's kind of a hybrid of Day of the Dead with elements of Burning Man and local urban youth graffiti artists. It's a pretty magical event, and I've been wanting to come for many years. This is my first time. It's also my first time at a Día de los Muertos official Mexican experience. I've gone to the one in San Francisco before, and I've been wanting to attend this festival for a long time because the idea of death is so far away from us in the U.S., or at least from me. And death has actually come closer to my life. Both my grandmother, who is 99, and my aunt are both preparing to pass on to the next experience. And so what better time to come down to Mexico and to be with this rich cultural tradition? So I'm honored that Claudia is hosting me here and really excited to give you this conversation that we shared today. So on the podcast, we are going to talk about how to create an ofrenda. We talk a lot about the history of Día de los Muertos. We get into, of course, the ideas of cultural appropriation. What does it mean that Día de los Muertos has moved around the world? And Claudia has a really beautiful perspective on that, particularly with her own background, being born in Mexico and then growing up in Texas, and then settling here in San Miguel to do this party. Pardon me, this festival, which is also a party. We talk about this idea of undrowning yourself from grief. And there's some really great ideas around what to do if you've just lost a loved one. There's an entire arc of reverence, and it takes a while to get fully into celebration. But dancing with the dead, now that's key. And in fact, that's actually part of the undrowning. And we talked about, you know, we talk on the podcast about jazz funerals in New Orleans, or Obon, the Japanese festival of dancing ghosts, and this idea that we dance with death. And overall, the conversation is really about bringing death near and honoring death, honoring our ancestors, and being aware ourselves of how fleeting this experience is and how some of the poignancy, perhaps all of the poignancy and beauty of this lived experience, does indeed come from its impermanence. At the very end of the track, we feature a song by Feathered Son called How Strange, featuring Matanza. And this is the acoustic version. And these are friends of Claudia's and a beautiful song contemplating life and death. And it just seems so appropriate to be at the end of this experience. So thank you so much for giving me permission to use your music at the end of this track, at the end of this podcast. And check out the track, Feathered Son. You can go on all of your places, because that's where everyone is. So this is a beautiful conversation and precious to record it here in San Miguel, in Claudia's home. And so without further ado, here is Claudia Oliver. And this is How to Celebrate Death. How you feel?
I'm feeling good.
Yeah.
Expectant. I would say expectant.
Yeah. This is the second time I have interviewed someone in the context of a festival that they're producing. And the first time, well, it's the first time I have, because the time before this, it just didn't happen, because it's so hard to line up the timing when someone's in full production mode. And here you are in San Miguel de Allende in full production mode for La Calaca.
Correct. Correct. It's coming up this day, tomorrow.
Yeah. Wow. So, I am here in your beautiful home.
Thank you for being here. We're so happy to have you.
It's wonderful. Yeah, I've always wanted to go to Mexico for Dia de los Muertos. And I was asking you if it's Dia de los Muertos or Dia de Muertos. And I've gotten the answer that it's both. Is that accurate?
I don't believe there's any. I was told it's Dia de Muertos, but a lot of people utilize Dia de los Muertos. So I also sway towards popular vernacular and think that you can do both. The correct form, I don't know. It could be Dia de Muertos. But the one that's used popularly, at least here on the streets in San Miguel de Allende, is both.
And how long have you lived in San Miguel?
I have been here permanently. I moved here from England about, I think it was 2006. But I've been coming here since I was a child.
And you grew up in Texas, yeah?
I grew up in Texas. I was born in Mexico. My mother married a North American Texan, and we went to live there. We were like the Mexican-American Brady Bunch, three white kids, three Mexican kids.
Wow. What was that like?
They were older surfers, and we were like these small little prim Mexicans that all dressed alike. And so we didn't really get to know them very much. But actually, my brother Ronnie passed this last year, and I'd like to bring him into my ofrenda this year.
What is an ofrenda?
An ofrenda is what most people would say an altar. It's a Day of the Dead altar. And the literal name for it is offering, an ofrenda. You could see the Latin root. And so what this is a place where when one celebrates the Dia de los Muertos or the spirits, it is the place where that particular person's or group people are honored. It is a place, let's say it's the landing spot as the spirits descend into this earth from wherever they may be.
And that's not specific to Dia de los Muertos. I see ofrendas around this home. I see one right in front of me here that we're sitting across.
Is an ofrendas. Again, as we look at entomology, it's like some people do interchange the word altar and ofrenda. And ofrenda is the one that I've leaned more towards, because there's an intentional, there's an intention within the word itself, an offering. What am I giving of myself? And what is then being offered to me as a reciprocity because of this action? I have to tell you, like, a lot of these altars that you see around the house or ofrendas are instinctual needs within me. As the world gets more and more chaotic outside, I somehow feel nurtured by feeling that there's a multi-layered dimensionality surrounding me that is there to comfort, assist, empower. And so as a Westerner, I guess, because I am mixed in culturally, when I came back to Mexico, I felt this tremendous sense of rooting and really, you know, being like, I got you. My grandmother would poop, you know, come in there and be like, I got you. Don't worry. We got this. And, you know, quite selfishly, one of the reasons I go deeper into some of these traditions is because I find them empowering in the modern context I live in.
I've noticed that some the cultures that do a lot of offering have a certain je ne sais quoi reverence and closeness with life. Like, for example, the Balinese, a Balinese woman spends a third of her life giving offerings. And everywhere you walk, you smell the flowers, you smell the incense. And so there are these offerings everywhere, and they create a texture to life, that there is a sense, a closeness with the natural cycles of life. And Bali actually reminds me of Mexican culture in certain ways, particularly around reverence for the passing, for death, for dying, for the community mourning and celebrating in the way that we do with Dia de los Muertos.
Correct. And like Balinese culture, I do believe that there is a revision in a way as to what works within it. I'm very much about observing traditions, but I'm not really one to get bogged down into some of the superstition or some of like the weighing down or the guilt or things that can come with some traditional religions from which these traditions are based.
What's a good example of something that you've kind of is a traditional thing that feels a particular way?
Iconography, for example. If you go around here in San Miguel de Allende, you'll go see a lot of the churches and a lot of the iconography that people have in their homes are like of these like martyred, you know, bleeding saints and all of this stuff. And it's just like, you go deeper and there's some elements that I'm just like, well, you know, I like the iconography of the flaming heart, for example. You know, I like the big wide open heart. I think that's something that I can relate to. So I do sort of pick and choose what I feel is necessary now. I don't believe in the martyred Christ. And actually, interesting we're talking about this, because in organizing festivals, so many of us that I speak to, you know, like from Envision to Burning Man, there is an element of martyrhood that you do for the common good. It's just like,
wait, are you saying you don't do that? Because I've spent some time with you here, and I feel like you're not fully eating during you're in production mode. And you're like, I'll have a miso, but I got to get back to work. So, I mean, do you include yourself in the ranks of festival production martyrs?
I think more than anyone. And for many years, I was like, Cloud, what's with this Joan of Arc syndrome that you've got to, like, you know, have a better town and you know, bridge cultures in your town, which are American and Mexican and different that becomes the impetus. But then I do look at myself personally oftentimes and think like, Cloud, no more cultural martyr. You're going to, you know, you're going to eat, you're going to sleep, you're going to have like a financial impetus for the, you know, there needs to be like a more circular retribution. But time and time again, these opportunities come and you just like go, yes, we will go forth and create magic.
Balance and sustainability, though, in creating magic. Correct. I feel like that's, you know, that's consistent for all of us.
It's a very universal theme amongst this culture. And when dealing with La Calaca, the element of commercialization towards something I believe is a citywide and if not worldwide invitation to participate in our ritual, it is a call to arms. And so one transcends the whys. You know, it's like I go more into like all the kids doing Extinction Rebellions, and there's a much higher calling for me with La Calaca that transcends normal festival payouts and structures. So it's been a weave, and that's the priority. The priority is that. So now the challenge is, how can the two work harmoniously together? How can it be sustainable and be something that is sacred and expansive to different places, you know?
So I want to get into how you've created this hybrid La Calaca in San Miguel. But I think to lay the foundation, a lot of our listeners today are going to be really interested in the tradition of Dia de los Muertos itself.
For sure.
And I was wondering if you could kind of lay the foundation and give us a brief history lesson.
With pleasure. So Dia de los Muertos, as we know it today, is and greatly been like expanded by the movies like Coco. Dia de los Muertos is a celebration in Mexico which takes origins from the various Mexican relationships with death, where you have in the Yucatan different, you know, you have the Maya in the Yucatan, Aztec, Mexica traditions, Tolteca in the central Mexico. You have the Purépecha in Michoacán that had a very strong death mythology, and then also Huasteca region. So you have various indigenous cultures, Otomi, which is the local indigenous tradition here. What's interesting is that they all had a celebration or an ofrenda with death. As Mexico became Christianized, they very naturally took on and implanted some of these traditions onto Christian seeming iconography and days as well, which is why quite easily the Dia de los Muertos or Dia de Muertos is on All Souls Day and the Feast of All Saints and All Souls. So you have this Halloween and then the next day, and these in turn are actually beyond, before Christianity, they're actually more pagan. You know, they're the feasts of harvests. They're the feasts of the slowing down, the crack in the earth when all of the souls will come, you know, forth and make their presence known. So there is a multicultural belief system surrounding these days already. In the turn of the century, you have the iconography, which is the one that you see in the Grateful Dead, you know, like the skeleton.
With the hat.
Yeah. The Katrina. So the Katrina is the big icon of the Day of the Dead. And this in turn, what's funny about that is that it's actually got nothing to do with Day of the Dead. This is more early turn of the century, Mexican Revolution, where you have the peasant classes revolting. And you have basically, it's a sarcastic social commentary from an artist called Jose Guadalupe Posada, a printmaker, who was lampooning the hoity-toity new European style industrialization social classes. And they pretended to be so holier than thou. And so painting them in this Katrina or as skeletons was his statement of saying, it doesn't matter what you have on the outside, you're still a Katrina inside. This was then appropriated into an icon of Dia de los Muertos, which just took root. And so when you have like these parades and processions and things like this based on the Katrina, it's actually a contemporary hybridization brought into a belief system that just took root.
How do you account for the popularity of Dia de Muertos worldwide now? It seems that this particular tradition is taking root in different cultures around the world. I was looking at with the imagery from Lakalaka, there are these geishas in the Dia de los Muertos makeup. How do you account for that? What's changed?
Well, this is what's interesting for me. Like it was in 2012 when I was on this, I'd been invited to the Burning Man Leadership Conference in San Francisco. On the same trip, I went to Doha to represent Mexico, San Miguel de Allende, for the TEDx World Conference organizers, of which I represented Black Rock City. And it was there, and then after that to London, and then after that to New York. As I looked around, I noticed that the Day of the Dead imagery was there. Alexander McQueen, I was at the Tate with Damien Hirst, you know, he had like the big skeleton. I saw, you know, different Ed Hardy with all the skeletons. And I thought, well, if they knew that in Mexico, we have this history of celebrating death, and yet visually, you know, it's a pop icon in a way. You know, it's become very fashionable to have all these skeletons there. I was like, what if, you know, it drew to me thinking death is something that seems to be a societal salve at the moment. As things escalate, it seems to be like quite fashionable to have death. Why don't we bring that back into where a story can actually be of use? Meaning, how do all these people address the topic of death? And I feel by addressing it in a new way to, you know, that Mexicans tend to celebrate it, and with that comes a whole milieu of what that means. It could be a useful and important exchange. As you were talking, I had like visions. I was like, I had a dream, and I did have a dream. I had a dream that I wanted to expand this tradition throughout the world, and I wanted to have a different narrative of Mexico that was being seen in the media. And this was this, you know, and I wanted my town to be healthy, and I wanted my town's people to come together in public spaces to celebrate in artistic projects that would draw all levels of the community together, celebrate traditions, celebrate innovation, be inclusive of our urban youth, as well as serve the very jet-setty international festival revelers that also descend on the city and showcase interculturality. Many of the people that we invite from overseas, like yourself and like many people, are drawn to it. And what I sense is such a sense of love and appreciation. And there's a tenderness that comes in wanting to really experience what Dia de los Muertos is. And it is an important balance, however, now that it is so popular, to keep that sanctity around it. It can have the parties, it can have the Instagrams, it can have the hashtags, but keep the essence of what it is. That's the part that we have to ignite hearts. That's the part that we have to just keep that in.
And so how do you do that?
Well, let's get back to the ofrenda. So what I'll do is a step-by-step, kind of like, you know, how you too can participate. One of the things I got from Burning Man was a participatory culture. We, a group of burners established what Lakalaka is. Myself, Brigham Golden, Veronique Pittman, Thomas Burke, Ling Rodden. We're all a group of San Miguel citizens that are expats that somehow learned from Burning Man culture how civic society can greatly impact your well-being. So this is a small town, and this idea came about. It very quickly took root. And what we wanted to do is just like have people participate, participatory culture. So this is publicly and privately. Steps to your own private ofrenda. Today, tomorrow, you know, get out a candle, get out some elements, and I'll go explain. You'll see the papel picado.
What is that?
Papel picado is a beautiful cut paper that you see those little paper
like the bunting, like in the paper wind, bunting. Yeah.
So that represents the wind element. So that the spirits who are thought to live in different skies, depending on what mythology you choose to go into. The one I was taught by Margarita Fick, who is one of like our country's greatest ever papel picado, like Smithsonian quality. I'll show you some works. She taught me some of the mythologies. And there's different skies. So imagine there's different skies. But the one of the warriors that comes down, it's in the sun. And so it comes down. And when it sees the marigold, you have a little trail that goes from the outside of your house into the inside, or just a symbolic line that kind of leads to your sacred space where you're going to have your altar.
So the what is the word again for the paper in the...
Papel picado calls the winds down.
Papel picado calls the winds. And then the marigold flowers...
It's like a landing pad. It's like follow the yellow brick road is what I call it.
And then that takes the spirits to your ofrenda.
Exactly. And so if you think about it, when they arrive, they just came from a long way away. So when they arrive, they're thirsty. You have a glass of water in there. I like to put chia, mint, you know, they want a little something. And maybe they need a little drink, you know.
Mezcal.
Tequila.
Tequila?
In this town, we're tequila.
Okay.
But yes, mezcal and tequila. And you know what? In this town particularly, we like Casa Aragones tequila. And we put something on the altar, on the ofrenda, for them to just have a sip. And you then have a little toast with them. Now, here's where I get multicultural with it. You know, if your buddy or the person you're celebrating, you used to always have a michelada, or maybe you had a margarita, or maybe you had a Bud Light. Don't be afraid to put that on the ofrenda. You're calling back the memory. You're calling back that person that we lost. You and I had art in common, for example.
Yeah, and that is Art Gimbel, who co-founded Fest 300 with Chip Conley.
I hope you'll join me.
Yeah.
Tomorrow, as we lay, and later on as we lay out the ofrenda, I want to have a plate of fruit. A plate of fruit, because that's what Art was distributing when we were at Envision Festival, and he was very kindly distributing fruit around. And also, you have fruit, you have food for the spirits to come down. We'll walk through the artisan markets tomorrow, and you'll see all the handmade sugar craft that's outside. And you'll see some of them that are like miniatures or folk art pieces that are enchiladas and chicken mole, and they're just these little things. And so you put food on there, similar to Buddhist, for the spirits to take the essence of the food. Obviously not to have it, but you're already like, you're preparing a feast for them. You're welcoming in the memory of a person who you would like to honor your ofrenda to.
You know, I'm already learning something here, because I have an altar at home, and my altar is very like new agey. Like, it has little things from places I've been, little things that are important to me. And that's a beautiful thing, but it's the altar is for me, and it's my relationship to the altar. It's my reflection. It's how I'm reminded. When you talk about an ofrenda, what I hear is that it's an offering to this person, offering them what they liked, what they might appreciate, and sort of calling them into your memory through the portal of this ofrenda. But it's not actually about you, right?
No. It's exactly. No, it's not. It's not. there's a reciprocity. You feel good doing it, and life somehow, you end up winning. But the intention is to offer.
Mm-hmm. And you've had some experience with death in your life. You've lost your father this year, which mm-hmm. we'll talk about. How do you feel that the ofrenda for you personally tangibly brings comfort and release and joy and connection? How does that work for you personally?
I think I was born naturally understanding the spirit world, and I feel presences, and I'm not a seer, but let's say when my grandmother died, that was like the first time I encountered like a very deeply close member of my family dying. And it was quite, you know, I was like in my early 20s, I was out, you know, clubbing and dancing, promoting parties and clubs and all of this thing. And that night I was very far away from my family. I instinctually needed to make an ofrenda, and I found myself without knowing, getting symbolically I got a sewing machine. I made her food that she wanted. I put it there. I put her picture there. I put water there. I looked back now, and I basically put in instinctually all of the elements that I needed for her to dance with me through the night. And it was this very powerful instinctual ritual that came out of me. And that night I went out and I was dancing with her spirit. I genuinely felt as though I was being embraced by something beyond me. And I get that often. I get that often when I go to festivals. I get it often now. And now my purpose is to try and weave that into my everyday life and everyone else's everyday life, if it makes sense for you. But I feel it gives you comfort. It's rooting to your roots. You know, so many of us don't have roots. I'm a nomad, and also for many different reasons, we're all sort of being shifted throughout the land for many things, and belief systems are crashing down. That to have a sense of eternity attached in your own way, new mythologies, I think is useful.
Yeah, the nomad piece is interesting. The idea of home and ancestry, and so my culture is Irish, Scottish, Australian. I mean, just basically British Isles through Australia and the U.S. And in my tradition, we don't have the same kind of reverence for death. Mm-hmm. Death is kind of something to be feared. It's loss. It's not something that's present with us. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if that's tied with a sense of home, ancestry, longevity, that some of the lack of that in the United States may be part of that.
Yeah, but you know, I challenge that, because I remember in England, I remember my ex who actually died, and I also put my ex-husband, I remember he would tell me, look, Cloudy, look over there. I believe it was birch trees. Whenever you see birch trees sort of like that in a mound, that means it's some sort of burial ground. And so it brings me to think like, maybe not for everyone, but there is a reverence towards death and an acknowledgement through life as well. The whole planting of a tree as a place of, this is where the kings were buried. You know, I believe something like that. So,
well, maybe it's less about where the roots came from, but maybe it's just in the immigration itself.
Correct.
That may be part of the kind of disconnect from ancestors. But I do know that in the U.S., I haven't lost any major figures in my life. Mm-hmm. My grandfather died when I was too young to know about it. But I'm currently in an experience where both my grandmother and my aunt are preparing to pass. So suddenly death is very present in my life. And what I've found in my family is that we're not really prepared for it. Mm-hmm. We don't have traditions. We don't have rituals. We're kind of on the fly figuring out how we're handling this experience of death and dying. And I think that there's so much that can be learned from a culture that keeps death close about what it means to live.
I agree. And that's why in terms of Día de Muertos, I believe that by inviting people to participate in it, I don't have this attitude of appropriation that might happen. It's not to say that it won't happen and that there are things that just seek to commercialize. I'm talking the practice itself of celebrating your death and having a moment of remembrance, having a moment where you can connect and you have an instruction manual from the culture just beneath you, you know, geographically that is, that says, hey, if you want to invite Uncle Benny back, let's think about him. Actually, it's funny. There's an image I had once that's here in the, there's been an American presence here in San Miguel since the late 40s. There was a GI Bill that invited a lot of American artists to an art school that got open here. And so in the old cemetery here in town, there's actually an American part of the cemetery. And I thought it was funny. I was like, so what happens at that part? They're like, you know, dishing out, like, instead of the enchiladas and mezcal and the mariachis that are happening up in the tequila in the cemetery, next door you have like the American part of the cemetery. They're kind of like serving mac and cheese and, you know, having like some Bud Lights or something. Or
mac and cheese and Bud Lights.
Doritos, although. But I do feel there is something that can be, especially for festival culture and where people do have a lot more access to temples or to sacred spaces delineated throughout the festival. More and more you see these little art pieces, you know, they're built under art, but they have an intention of inviting the sacred, I believe. And inviting, we are spiritually displaced, many of us. I do feel that having an opportunity to experience connection or some sort of like reverent self, access to your higher self, access to your ancestors, having this kind of access and seeing where you stand within it and if it helps you, and having the permission to be able to integrate it into your own practice in whatever way makes sense for you can be tremendously liberating. When you were telling me about your current circumstance, there was in me at least an openness. First of all, I felt that you are processing this in a way that, whoa, 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 whoa. You know, there's definitely a deep liminal process going on in you that's wondering, where am I with this? This is, but it was also beautiful for you to observe your aunt and say, this is a beautiful, luminescent being who is grateful for her life. And I'm here to sit with her and talk to about, you know, where she is as she's coming to these last moments. And within you as well, there is a culture that many men come from, which is you're expressed not to cry, you know, not to feel the emotion, not to feel the path. Hey, it's not so bad. You know, she's in a good place. And we can coach ourselves into thinking, it is all okay. But I also feel it's important to address the sadness of the loss within us. And this is something that we suppress our sadness. We mask it in anger, or we mask it in addictive behavior and denial. And what happens if we can actually let it express itself and let the tears come as we're creating art? This is what's happened to me as I've done ofrendas, and I think this is good. I needed for this to come up. There's a catharsis in it.
Yeah, I was actually talking to my mother about how this is a very profound and important time for her. She's losing her mom and her sister at the same time. Her mother, 99 years old, so it's been expected. A glorious, glorious, glorious woman, my grandmother.
The gardener, I love her. Yeah, I love
she's
her.
She's an internationally renowned gardener in Santa Fe, New Mexico. And we spoke about death and gardening. And we'll talk about that. And then my aunt, she was diagnosed with a terminal pancreatic cancer a few months ago. And it's been a pretty quick.
Very aggressive.
It's been very aggressive. Mm. And for my mother lost her other sister, Nori, when she was 19. And what my mom told me is, she said, well, I've never really grieved Nori. So now here comes death saying, well, you're going to crack open. And she knows it's coming. She can see the wave coming. And it's a really interesting experience to be with my grandmother, with my aunt, and then also with my mother, while death comes to
clarify and bring people together in certain ways. And you mentioned denial, like to knock away the denial, because there is no denial of death. Mm-mm. Death comes for us all.
Correct.
And can we leverage that to open our hearts and grow and feel the loss and feel the pain, and also have, what I love about Dia de Muertos is also have levity and joy and play within that. If we can widen the breadth of our humanity in the context of death, then we can meet it, you know, and allow it to transfigure us in a profound way. But if we're hiding and the loss is too painful to think about, and we can't, if we don't hold death close to us, then when it does come, we're getting smacked by a wave we didn't learn how to swim in.
Correct. It's funny that you just brought the wave. As you were talking, I got the image. I love, occasionally I've surfed in my life. And yet when I went to these big, deep waters where you saw this wave coming in, it's coming at you, it's crashing. It's like she's going to have this like immense grief coming in. There's the option of swimming underneath the wave in the slipstream. And that is, you know, a reaction to saying, you know, I know it's coming, but I do have a choice in how I react to this. And that can be a deeply informative time to observe Dia de los Muertos and see like, wow, as you were talking, I'd love to see a picture of her. I'd love to hear any memory about her. And this, I feel, is like what's also cathartic for the person. It's like, oh, I remember this, or I remember that. When I tell the stories of my grandmother, when I think the stories of my grandmother, when I take time to check in with her and be like, wow, remember when we did this and this? Now I love drawing, or, you know, like, and really going in there, I believe the biochemical process that happens as you cleanse yourself from a lot of this painful residue, we're lighter. It's like a spiritual detox, you know. It's a way of stomping in new energy into what you're doing. And does it help you in your day-to-day life in this contemporary world that we live in? Yes, I do believe so.
My grandmother is an incredible gardener, and I found myself recently taking my indoor plants more seriously. So that's the level that I'm at.
I'm with you.
Something we had an earlier conversation, and you were talking about honoring my grandmother by putting more energy into my relationship with plants in my home in San Francisco. And I've been thinking a lot about that lately. And I think one of the ways that we honor those who are passing and those who will pass, those who have passed, is to keep them alive by letting them enrich our lives. You know, I keep my grandmother alive, and she's giving me an offering and a gift and saying, get more involved in plants. And
it's interesting you deal with plant medicine as well. You know, she, like you, resonates with plants. And so your exploration, your psychic exploration and life exploration has included plants in a ceremonial circle.
Well, and that's what's crazy too, is she's been an atheist her whole life. She's been deaf since she was 11. She's a really strong liberal humanitarian, donates a bunch of money. He's been really, you know, just had this really big, beautiful life, but has been an atheist her whole life. And she and I had a conversation about death, where I talked about taking ayahuasca. Ayahuasca is the vine of death, and having an experience where I actually got to speak to death, mm-hmm, within this psychedelic realm, and how death expressed to me in that moment that, because basically everything was blooming and beautiful in my visions, and then everything wilted, and it was just me and death in the back of some dusty tavern. That was the vision that I had. And I was so mad, and I was like, Death, God, why do you ruin everything? You just fucking ruin things. What are you doing? Like, I was so mad and petulant. And Death kind of did a little laugh, like you would if you were Death, and was basically like, well, you don't really understand all the beautiful things that just bloomed. They all are because of death. Death creates life. Death is part of a cycle of refreshing and rejuvenating. If there was no death, we would just all be on top of each other in a horrible mess of sameness and boring. You know, iteration comes
eternal from sunshine ain't so grand.
Exactly. And I expressed that to my grandmother. And I think because of the connection with the plants, she was like, I like your ideas of, you know, because I was talking about how there's something bigger. And she said, I like that. I think those are, I might think about it this way. And it was apparently a pretty profound moment for her talking about consciousness. And again, the through line there was plants, her love of plants and my connection with plant medicine.
In general, I think like the connection with nature, as well as also an access into the spirit world. You get to see, as you said, the life cycle, the spiral of it all, life into death, death into life. You see darkness into lightness, and it's just a continual spiral of oppositions. Avoiding one is just completely living a lie.
Well, and that's what actually keeps it, it's most harmful if you avoid it, because if you keep it close as a friend and you relate to it, then you're prepared. But if you avoid it, you're kind of keeping it close in a similar way. Jason Silva, who's on the podcast, talks a lot about Rage Against the Dying of the Light, the Dylan poem. And
love it.
Yeah. And
thank you for bringing into this podcast.
Rage Against the Dying of the Light.
And, read it, people.
And what I see in him is just a rejection of impermanence. Why can't it be? Why can't this moment of love be forever? But actually, I think that forever would be itself the prison. You know, impermanence is what creates the profundity and the beauty. When I went to Burning Man in 2011, I saw that gorgeous Temple of Transition. And I was talking to a friend. I was like, they're going to burn this? This is my second year at Burning Man. My first year really deeply interacting with the temple space. They're going to burn it. It's gorgeous. They should keep it. My friend said, it's gorgeous because they burn it. The impermanence, the fact that Burning Man itself is just a week, the temple is here and then it's gone. That's what allows us to live most richly and presently.
Exactly. And I think you see the way that that's very pagan. I mean, the whole Burning Man itself, it's just this like life into death. It's sort of like this offering. I feel all of that was an offering, that you like have a sacrifice in a way for the next harvest to be good. And I agree, like that tremendous amount of work and beauty, you're like, what do you mean? It's that's wasteful. It's terrible. But the elements of belief surrounding it, ashes to ashes, all of this like life cycle, that's a profound testimony. That's a profound message that it's sending out. That same year, I believe it was that same year, I could be wrong, Andrea Brooke was at the sunset of the temple with the earth harp strung up to it, playing this beautiful, enrapturing melody. And I had begun to work with the Dia de los Muertos here, and I tell you, I could feel the energy that was placed at the temple with her playing. And I thought, this is like the Dia de Muertos. This is a eulogy for the dead, for the spirits. And I could feel and I could sense everyone's strong emotions surrounding it. And it came over like a balsam of music that just made this incredible impression on me and motivated me to have her come to La Calaca, where we also have, as you've seen in our central courtyard, this beautiful neoclassical parroquia, it's called, church. And the first La Calaca, she brought her instrument, but in this time it was immersed in the traditions of Dia de los Muertos. And when Andrea came here and played all of the papel picado that was lining the street, so it was like a bunch of like the flags lining, at the moment she ascended, there was a moment where these strong winds took over. And everyone just paused and looked about them, because it was thought that it was the spirits of the dead that were coming in to listen to the concert. And if you were to film a movie surrounding it, you would say, yes, that's correct. That feels exactly like that. It was everyone's belief system was united to believe that. And she started playing this music. And at that moment, a lot of monarch butterflies, who in Purépecha, indigenous myth from Michoacán, believe that the monarch butterflies coming down are the spirits of the dead descending. So that motivated Andrea to change her instrument and found what she is calling the sonic butterfly, which is a stringed instrument based on the spirits of the dead coming back. So all this to say, like the stories between festival culture coming in here, adopting to or being inspired by different belief systems, how that expands culture into something that's meaningful for us now. Although I very much respect traditions surrounding Dia de los Muertos, original ones, ones that aren't for cultural performance, the Otomi have a way of celebrating. I don't want the crowds around them. I somehow I know it's touristic, but I sometimes think Pátzcuaro and Janitzio, places in Michoacán, are now so overrun with tourism that I wonder if the people themselves are what they think about it.
The people who are local, people who are involved in those rituals that have become tourist attractions, and then they're kind of performing and they're making a living. It's a time when the hotels are all booked. It's a time with a lot of work. So it brings in money, but at the same time, it creates this commercialization.
And there's arguments for everything. But what I do think is, how about instead of going to Michoacán to look, or maybe you've seen it once, how about then taking that to your own home? Back wherever you are, you know, and yes, exploring ways in that we as La Calaca can be in other places as well. We got an invitation from Daybreaker, who on the Ajolotl, which is our art car at Burning Man, we got an invitation from Daybreaker, the morning dance vibes from New York City, that they want to do an ofrenda dance. It's actually, I believe it's going to be tonight, if not tomorrow, in New York City, honoring that dance to the dead and partnering with us in terms of they're going to set up an ofrenda there, they're going to dedicate it, and they're going to offer that dance to the spirits of the dead, inviting everyone to bring in a spirit. And I think culturally, that's something that I feel really proud of. It's more being able to inject more and more celebrations with a deeper meaning without necessarily getting lost in like the rhetoric of, or the harshness of religion. But there is, I believe, a sacred secularity that is emergent that I feel is something we can latch on to.
You touched on two things just now. One, the cultural consumption through tourism. The other, cultural appropriation. And these are some thorny issues in terms of how one who is not of a Latin tradition approaching Day of the Dead. For example, what is the face makeup called?
Catrinas.
The Catrina makeup. Mm-hmm. This has become very popular. It gets a lot of likes on Instagram. We did a Dia de los Muertos party in San Francisco for Fest 300 in 2013. And of course, like, I wanted to have a beautiful face makeup. In festival culture, there's so much about costumes. So the question about the line of cultural appropriation is an interesting one. Who can participate and why? You know, this year, Mattel came out with a Dia de los Muertos Barbie. So
I want one, by the way.
Yeah, yeah.
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 Yeah. I mean, you know, the point is, I grew up pop. I grew up in Mexico, actually. When I was still living in Mexico, on the Mexican side, we didn't celebrate Dia de los Muertos. We celebrated Halloween. My earliest memories were Halloween. I had Halloween piñatas, you know? But in doing that, yes, it's a very important conversation to have. I don't pretend to have the answers. But what I do, as La Calaca, represent is the expansion of the essence of what we're about. We're about remembrance. We're about death. We are about celebration. In terms of dressing up, I love dressing up as much as anyone else. Just don't forget what you're doing it. If we can somehow trigger you through your fun and your revelry and your Instagram photo that looks so great and the fabulousness to, for a moment, recall someone that you've lost that meant someone to you, and we can trigger in you a deeper sentiment, then we're beginning to seed meaning into your life.
Well, the thing with cultural appropriation, as I understand it, is that part of it has to do with an asymmetry of power.
Correct.
And that there's a certain kind of taking of the fruits of culture without really regarding not just the culture, but the livelihoods and the safety and the economic opportunity of the people from whom that culture comes. I think that the thing about borrowing different kind of cultural affectations is in and of itself not wrong or bad, but I think part of what is painful and potentially rapacious about cultural appropriation is, so like, take the Native war bonnet, for example, the Native American war bonnet. It's the most obvious example of cultural appropriation because you can see the power differential most extremely. Mm-hmm. So festival kids dancing often on reservation land where a lot of festivals take place, wearing a war bonnet that they have no connection to. It's tremendously offensive. But then if we extrapolate that out, is a bindi, is that as offensive? And some people would say yes, some people would say no. Some people of the culture would say yes, someone say no. And I think that the asymmetry of power is part of what ends up being harmful. And also, is it to your point, like, is it taken in its true spirit? There's a rave called Hard Day of the Dead. It's like an Insomniac hard events. I don't know if it's Insomniac, but it's a rave that's Day of the Dead. And they use all the imagery. Now, are there people who are of Latin American descent who would go to that and be like, wow, I love raves? And raving is super popular in the Latin American population in the U.S. I love raves. Hard is celebrating Day of the Dead. This is celebrating my people. I feel at home here. I love this. This is beautiful imagery. Or does someone show up and say, okay, here's another commercial enterprise that's capitalizing on my culture and my people?
I believe it's a very complex answer because there's so many different circumstances. For example, here, you know, we have graffiti artists, we have mappers, we have a young population that is demanding a different kind of entertainment that at once blends in a reverence for their own traditions. Now, it's all about intention. As we get to people, it's like, who is the person putting this on? What is your motivation? Is it to make a buck because it's easy to get Day of the Dead imagery? You want to do that? Do that. But I'm not going to stop anyone, you know, trying to stop them. But what we can do ourselves is to work in integrity. Ourselves. It's a very deep positionality that I have the arrogance of saying, let's do a Day of the Dead festival. And when we came, we had some of that. We wanted to bring in external and really be flashy to an external population.
And all of the Laka Laka producers were all living in San Miguel, but we're all expats from the U.S.?
Not all, but some of us, yes. Okay. Even like myself, I guess I would be like one of the more there was our graffiti arts. We managed to sort of like merge, but let's say the core founders, yes. Chileno, Americans, and myself, that's Mexican-American.
And how was that received?
Not San Miguelenses. There was pushback. There was pushback, but pushback came from various reasons. Pushback initially was, you know, this isn't the way we've always done this. Let's look at the Katrina parade, for example. The Katrina parade started here in San Miguel about 17 years ago, more or less, by the Chacero family, who have a development, and to attract things to do or an activity, they invented a Katrina parade amongst targeted for American people to dress up and to really enjoy this Mexican tradition here in town. Afterwards, after many years, it started opening up to the actual Mexican population here. But the initial intent of it, the invention of it, was an American attraction to attract some of our population to celebrate in that way. There was a woman who was the original Katrina. The original Katrina that brought this back is an American woman called Peggy Taylor. She is a beautiful tango dancer. She married a Mexican man many years ago and had five Mexican children, an American woman that came here. And she decided on certain days to get dressed up and go around the jardín dressed up as a Katrina. But it was her that started this. So you start to wonder, was she appropriating? Was she becoming what her soul was yearning her to be? You know, these are questions, you know, she is genuinely a Mexican. It's just she's not born here.
You know, where I land on this subject is to talk about it, to listen, and to be sensitive, and to recognize when one feels themselves defensive. I think that's the kind of the key. If you feel like, well, I should be allowed to wear this. It's a costume. Who cares? They should know. Like, as soon as the defensiveness starts, that's something to watch. Okay, so there's something off there. If you can be open and dissonance. Loving and the story that you just told about this woman, to me, that's a beautiful story. And I have no judgment about that story. And I think part of that story, too, is coming to this place and connecting with this place. And I loved how you said, oh, could it be that that was her soul's blossoming, her soul's transformation? And I think one of the things that's most, the straitjacket of PC culture is that we, in the interest of not ever harming anyone's sensitivities, that we might lock up our potential souls blossoming. So there's a balance. It has to be.
Yeah, it's a very complex topic, and I don't pretend to have the correct answers. What I do is try and reflect our activities, and what we urge is for people to go back to the intent, which is to celebrate a loved one, to make your own ofrenda. Yes, go out to the raves. Yes, go out to the parties. Yes, do all of it. But hey, at this time, can we encourage you to celebrate with us in this participatory way by you having a Dia de los Muertos ofrenda?
Well, and in that spirit, let's get back to the ofrenda. I want to touch on the cultural appropriation, which is important, but I also just wanted to kind of weave in some other traditions. One of the traditions that I find really compelling is the jazz funeral in New Orleans. That's another one with celebration and music mm-hmm. and excitement. And I think that to come back to this idea of broadening the width of what death celebration could be. Mm-hmm. What are some other ways of celebrating death that that you have connected with outside of Dia de los Muertos or that you've explored?
In terms of connected with, I've gone so deep into my own that I can only be like a distant voyeur or a bystander for the Indian, the burial mounds, for example, or different ways that people are like in water. And I can't really say so much about them because it's a very distant view I have. I'm currently going deeper into it, but I'm starting more, I think, into my own mourning process, because at the moment I'm trying to understand what does that mean within myself and in what way can my knowledge and deep understanding be of service to my community.
So in that spirit, my dear friend Sophia, who I went to college with, actually the original owner of my cat, Ella, who passed away, a deep experience with death for me, my best friend, little cat who passed, and maybe I'll tell that story. Sophia just and quite suddenly lost a best friend. And she's going through an experience right now where she'll talk to people about it and she'll be like, oh, I wish I could have done something. And I'll say, no, think about it this way. And she's like, I don't want to think about it my way. There's a tension around how to be held, how to be supported in this immediate crisis of death. And in this conversation, we're talking a lot about the celebration of those who have passed in the context of ancestors, ofrendas, in the context of Dia de los Muertos. What would you say to Sophia, who has just lost a loved one? How might she, and actually her mother is Venezuelan, so she has some of these Latin traditions. How would you suggest that she brings some of these traditions and ideas into how she approaches this sudden and quite painful death?
First of all, I want to say it takes time. It really depends, first of all, I'm finding it difficult to bring my father to the ofrenda this time, and it's been a few months. It's a very charged emotion. I feel, be gentle on yourself. Don't feel that, hey, it's Day of the Dead, you just lost someone. Hey, let's just slap him up on an ofrenda. It doesn't work like that. I know of people that have just lost someone this week and they're coming to San Miguel. And, in the midst of all, like, what shall I wear and what outfit do I put on for this event or for that event, and being completely consumed by their aesthetic demeanor, actually lost one of their best friends. And to hold them, and they're like, okay, but we have to keep carrying on with our events. It's like, yes, but let us honor her in whatever way we can. It's a very tender topic. It's a very tender topic. I believe I'm very happy to speak to her, but if she would want to have someone to discuss with, how can you create this? How can I have this at home? Or just someone to talk to about what was she like? I think there is, in curanderismo, I practice Mexican folk healing, and there is something called desahogar, which means to undrown yourself.
Ooh, say that again.
Desahogar.
To undrown yourself.
So sometimes you have such suppressed stories to tell or emotion to impart or something. So being in a therapeutic context for someone, just being that listener, helps that person desahogarse. My father was a very complex man, he caused a lot of strong emotions with people. And so it wasn't just an easy letting go. It was like that, he was a strong Mexican macho guy. that had a lot of Mexican emotion attached to it. And processing that emotion in a healthy way, but not suppressing it and not let it, you know, not pretending it's not there. We have to allow the emotions to well up within us. And once they do, then we can begin to put their image, you know, it depends on your own relationship, where you're at and what relationship you had with that person. But I would invite her to address it and not to, you know, to be okay with it not being okay. The mourning process for me is to be okay that things aren't okay.
Coming back to this idea of the hybridization of traditions, your father passed away in the spring, and you chose to observe some Judaic mourning traditions.
Naturally,
yeah.
Again, instinctively.
And you're not Jewish, no. But you leaned into these instinctive ways of processing that turned out to map really beautifully to Judaic mourning.
Correct. I had a true privilege in going to Israel with the Schusterman Foundation on these reality trips, and it was a complete eye-opener. And I really loved some, I was very much drawn to the music. I was very much drawn to traditions such as Shabbat, which is, I think that's got a relevance in today's contemporary world. But anyway, irrespectively, when I lost my father, I came back to San Miguel. I'd been in Berlin. He died mid-flight. And when I came back, I stayed at home all week long. I just wanted to just be at home, be at peace. The first time I came out was a friend of mine, Amanda, asking if I wanted to come to Shabbat at her house. She's from Los Angeles, recent move here. I walk in, there's four of us, and this lovely man who it turns out being Jonah, he's being the rabbi of Harvard's Jewish Center, comes in with a pan dulce, and instead of challah, because you can't get challah here, and he comes in there, and he is the person that helps us go into the Shabbat. And I'm really wanting to observe the traditions, and you wash the hands and you close the eyes and then the light comes in. I like the steps to ritual. And I explained to him, I said, you know, I haven't left the house in 7 days. And I kind of decided I want to take a slow morning. I want to take slow morning and just give myself a whole year to just observe myself within it. And if things are a little bit different, I'm in mourning. I'm in a slow remembrance and process. And he said, that's very interesting. This is very similar to Jewish tradition. The first day you come out, you came out to Shabbat. And then he proceeds to sing me these beautiful songs called Kaddish. And that's the songs that are the back and forth sung. And he was translating them as he was singing them. And we were sort of observing them. Amanda has a beautiful voice. And I felt the spirit of my father releasing from inside some of my heart. The relief, the letting go,
what
the
is,
heaviness.
What is that word again? The undrowning?
Me estaba desahogando.
Yeah, sounds like that again.
You're like, it's all about that big exhale. And I feel that dancing with your dad, also move it. When you dance, some of our parties will dance, will last through the morning. And I encourage it because even though they are electronic and the DJs are from Mexico, from Berlin, from different parts of the world, we are reenacting in a contemporary way, in my opinion, some of the same ways in which indigenous cultures used to dance their way into percussive rhythms into the morning. When you go into the dance of the dead, you go in it to win. You go in it to dance, transmute yourself through the dance. It goes back into that stomping that we danced to in Garbage. It's all about stomping new energy into the earth.
Claudia and I were at a festival called Garbage in Poland. She invited me, a really cool festival, and she was teaching me to dance with bare feet and to stomp into the ground. And that's one of my favorite memories of you. This dancing thing is so cool. You know, there's a festival in Japan called Obon, which is the festival of dancing ghosts. You know, the jazz funeral is a dance party. You know, this idea of dancing with death, I wonder what is being balanced in that way, that there's this mourning, there's this release, and then when that heaviness, maybe it's the fact that heaviness is released and then dancing can happen, that there's a deep mourning, there's a deep grieving, there's an undrowning and then dancing. Would you say that's accurate?
I believe that the dancing itself is what causes the undrowning.
Oh.
You see, it's the, that is what helps. So my teachers, who are Diamond and River Jameson, they are very solid, like new paradigm thinkers. And they have integrated into their program, you dance. Basically, every emotion that you have gets caught in you as a biochemical process. And when we shake it, I love it. He calls it shake medicine. When you let it out physically, whether it be pounding or, charge, through like strong energy, through sport, but dancing is what activates your heart and your whole body, and you come into it really feeling this like release thing because you've really shake medicine. You've shaken out whatever negative chemical process is in you. You've allowed your body to just physically release it.
When an animal has just escaped death, they shake. They shake. They as soon as they're safe, they shake it out. And there's a great book called Your Body Keeps the Score, and it talks about trauma being stored in the body.
Mm-hmm, correct.
When I did my yin yoga teacher training, one of the things that we studied and talked about was trauma being stored in the fascial network, in the connective
correct.
Tissue.
Correct.
And when I did iboga, I felt that kind of cellular chiropractic through my fascia. It really resonates with me, this dancing and shaking to move the grief out of the body. And when we say, how do we celebrate death? Well, what I'm hearing from you and from the lessons of Dia de los Muertos, from the lessons of your own life, how we celebrate death? Well, for one thing, it takes its time. There is time when celebrating death, when death isn't quite ready for celebration, when death is still, when there's still loss to be felt, when there's still that, the waves and how they come. But that ultimately, the celebration of death really requires dancing and requires movement and requires the ofrenda that brings the deceased person in, and then the dance.
Correct. I mean, so interesting. I think I'd been sort of slightly repressing my sentiment towards my father. And right now, as you were talking, there's a lot of different events, but one of the private events that I'm consulting on, that one is a disco calaca. It's going to be a disco party. It's going to be a disco theme party.
When is that one? When's the disco theme party?
That one's, it's a private birthday party.
But oh man, I want a disco dead.
You're very invited.
Okay.
and I'm getting Donna Summers done and Sylvester, and we're doing like a disco themed party. However, I just got a memory of dancing with my father when I was 10, something like this, and doing like all these little disco moves, you'd have all these little set choreographed things. My father was the first person that ever took me to a dance floor. And he was like the guy that used to like clear the dance floors, like when the they were like disco looking, and he was like such a gallant man. And as you were talking, I was like, oh my gosh, I'm going to hear this music that reminds me of my father, and I am going to dance with him and his spirit as we do Roller Coaster of Love, as we do Disco Inferno. You better believe I'm going to be dancing with my dad and just giving it some.
What's your father's name?
Jesus Aguirre.
Jesus. What do you put in your ofrenda for Jesus? What is Jesus like?
For him, well, I'm looking at teeth. He was a dentist. I'm going to put in some teeth. I'm just looking at this.
Yeah, there's an altar here with there's a jawbone on this altar, and on it is written, God have a feminine face.
Frida, she's an artist.
Is that Frida Kahlo?
No, Frida, who you met.
Oh, Frida, who we met. That this is her piece?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So.
Okay. Cool. What is Frida's full name, the artist who we...
Frida Velázquez.
Yeah, and she created...
She's a mezcalera.
Mm-hmm. A mezcalera? What is that?
She has a brand of her own mezcal.
Oh, cool.
But so what is going to go on my father's ofrenda? My father's ofrenda is going to have an image I have downstairs of him and his other sisters. By now, there's only one, the oldest, that's left, and the rest of the 8 children have passed. I'm going to place that on there. I'm going to place an image of him as a strong man in his health when he was still that boss, that Dr. Aguirre. In terms of food, I'm going to see if I can make a machacada con huevo. I'm going to have a plate of black beans. The thing he loved most was just like simple food. He just wanted tortilla, black beans, machacada con huevo.
Machacada con huevo, that's what you made me. That's the eggs and tortilla.
I made you migas. That's what I make my grandmother. For my father, I'm going to make him a coffee with 3 teaspoons of sugar, which of course could have led to very bad health problems later on. But yes, a coffee with a lot of sugar on it. I'm going to place a pair of glasses that he gave me that were his. And I'm going to place that as an object. For my grandmother, I'm going to put her bells that she had. I'm going to make her food. And then beyond it, I'm going to have some pasuchil. I'm going to offer them different areas. I'm going to make a mandala out of beans and hibiscus flower and corn, just on plates to feed them in case they decide to have any spirit parties of their own. There'll be plenty of things on the thing. You never know if they're coming solo or accompanied.
The mandala is another beautiful celebration of impermanence. Mm-hmm. And that's a Buddhist symbol. Mm-hmm. Where
that's been appropriated.
That's been appropriated. And I love, there will be these Buddhists who painstakingly create tiny little grains of sand to create this gorgeous wheel of life and then brush it all away in a moment.
And they're doing that here right now on the streets. We'll go in a little bit. They've painted sawdust. Aserrin and some of our artisans are now doing these carpets of designs and flowers for the big event that's happening called Shantolo. That's on Friday night.
So I'm understanding the ofrenda, of course, and the marigold. Why the Katrina makeup specifically? Is that simply just to be in the spirit of the dead, to make the dead feel welcome here? Because that's the icon that is most well known.
Yeah, I think it's just like what happens when things take root in the global unconscious. You know, that's something that began that people, Mexicans, Americans, everywhere. It seems to have seen, it's what took root. Was it correct? Is it truly the pre-Hispanic? No. But it's, I think, yesterday you saw I had a makeup artist come and sort of like do a trial on my face. And
which will be the image of this podcast.
Which one can see. And as I reflected on looking at myself, it did actually allow me to step into that, wow, this underneath this cloud, you are also this. So it was kind of like a very fun visual way of accepting my own mortality.
That brings me to a question that I wanted to talk to you about today, which is, how do you think of your own mortality? How do you think of your own death? And how would you like to be honored?
I think about it a lot, actually, since this started. Not to be morbose, I was like, Cloud, are you okay? What's with this, constant death rumination? But in my instance, I believe in celebrating life as much as possible. I do know I am hit. I feel the earth's fragility. I feel my own mortality. I know that there is a small amount of time to really take advantage of everything that this world has to offer. And I lead my life in a very nonlinear way because I chase, what does my spirit want to do today? Who can I serve? How can I be my highest expression? And that sometimes takes you away from like what you might do if you were thinking, what are my success goals? It's a very windy route. How I think about death. So how I think about death is, I read a book or the back of a book partially. I just read somewhere an author who had worked with a lot of death and dying in hospices decides to write a book based on, what if this was your last year to live? Posing himself that question. How would you change what you're doing in your day to day? And I decided to place that question and amend it to my own life. But I have led my life in the last few years according to that premise. Like, what choices am I making? How can one day, this day, be super special? What does that look like? And it's gotten a lot of how I respond to that. It means a lot more self-nurturance. It means allowing fun and play to take precedent. It means allowing whatever you're doing for yourself and the planet to really matter, just so that, you know, if one lives with the premise of like, let's leave the planet a little bit better than when we, you know, I want to leave here. I want to leave having made some sort of impact for the good and not be a cultural martyr. So
balance.
Balance. So it's that balance about what's going to make me happiest. How can I be of service? Like, you know, have fun, do good. Personally, in terms of the actual death experience, it's funny. I was just in Japan and I saw this beautiful ceremonial kimono. And I walked in, I was like, Clow, you're not here to buy kimonos. You're here for a wedding and to see your friends and go back. And I just kept thinking about it. And I was like, wow, maybe that's like my burial gown. I was like, Clow, you're thinking about burial gowns? I was like, yeah, let's think about burial grounds. So how is it going to happen? I'm not really sure. I want there to be a celebration. I know that by now, so many times I feel like, what does this need to be remembered? What is this one? And yet it would be nice.
There's a guy named Ned who I adore, who runs a poetry and music open mic in San Francisco, a monthly called You're Gonna Die. You're going to die. And at the beginning, everyone says, I'm gonna die. And Ned is a brilliant host, really incredible man. And he cries a lot. He laughs a lot. He's a very alive person. And one of the things that he says is, and one of his lines is, in 4,000 years, you are the same as Beyonce. You know? So this idea of being remembered, if we are remembered by the ripples of our effects and the way that we helped others, that's a beautiful way of living. But to live for the memory of what we might be when we die, to amass some sort of fortune and create some sort of legacy as a way of creating immortality, as a way of running from death, not only does that rob you of life, but at the end of the day, or at the end of 4,000 years worth of days, it doesn't matter whether you were Beyonce. What matters is you living right now in this moment. And I think that actually by doing death meditation and death practice and being close to death and having an open heart to death, welcoming death in, it allows us to live more fully and more alive. And ever since I had this this one particular experience with ayahuasca that I told you, where I had this communion with death, my relationship has changed. I have a meditation up on my wall about to think about death, to be reminded and to remember. And it's kind of like other stoic kind of practices of bringing into presence that which you would rather avoid as a way of being free, because the chains and shackles aren't the failure, the death, the tragedy, the illness, although an illness can be a chain, but the chain isn't the bad thing so much as it's the fear of the bad thing and the limitation on living in the apprehension of something bad happening.
Yep, I agree. And, you know, you were saying the admittance of one day I will die. What did Ned said? Sorry.
He said the event is called You're Going to Die. And at the very beginning, he says, I want you to repeat after me, I'm going to die. Right. And then everyone says, I'm going to die.
So that's a great segue for me. One of the songs that has been from some of the DJ talent that has come here along the way, Feathered Sun, Nicola Cruz, Matanza, 1 year. There's a collaborative song between them, and Acid Poly, I believe, is on it. And it's called How Strange. And the opening line of it is that reflection, one day I will die and I'll be laughing. And I feel like leaving with a chuckle, with a little grin, and somehow swimming into the whole milieu of everything that, you know, I feel the way that Coco was expressed in a very contemporary way, sort of like goes into the magicality that may or may not be waiting.
Mm. Yeah, my mother likes to say that, or she's quoting someone.
Magicality, a word.
Magic, we'll take it. We'll allow it.
Thank you.
We'll allow it. You only live once.
Magicalidad.
There you go. Yeah, no, if you say it in Spanish,
magicalidad. It'll
lie. My mother says, I think she might be quoting it. It might be her own saying, but God is never serious, but very sincere. And I feel that way about life and death is, may we be very sincere and loving and empathetic, and take with sincerity our desire to make the world a better place. And at the same time, laugh at the cosmic joke of it all. Laugh in the joy, not at death, but with death.
Correct. And that's exactly the encapsulation I feel of Día de los Muertos. Día de Muertos.
Día de los Muertos, Día de Muertos. And then the final is, what about the death of us all? You know, what
the
about
planet.
the grief that we experience as we feel that we are harming our ecosystem to the point of mass extinctions, including potentially our own? How can we even address this reality if we are too afraid?
Did you see there are two monarchs dancing outside of our window right now?
Oh.
At that moment.
At the very moment, two butterflies, the butterfly of transformation.
So this year at La Calaca, we have decided to utilize this awareness to really bring light. You've seen some of the graffiti and urban artworks. The thematic that was given to some of the artists was to do with extinction, was to do with honoring those animals that have been leaving the planet in the last 10 years, to address the gods of the underworld that are taking over the entire planet, the entire humanity. So this also gives pause for reflection. In what way can my consciousness contribute as a positive force in the world? In what way can my awareness of death looming its head over me and over the planet, how can that make me a better person? And how can that make me a better steward of the planet in which we live?
And can we do that in a way where we are putting our full energy and resources to the task at hand while maintaining levity, while maintaining poetry, and while maintaining connection with each other?
Correct.
Rather than the rage against each other for what's happening.
The desperation.
The desperate, the grasping, the hoarding. Can we, you know, if we are truly a species in hospice, if that's truly the case, what can we learn?
A species in hospice. That's a good one.
It's a terrifying one, but what can we learn from, not only from practices of death doula, what can we learn from Dia de Muertos, from honoring the dead, from creating a perpetual ofrenda for our own species?
Yeah, exactly. Well stated. What can we create?
What can we create? Well, and I guess, you know, I guess that is an invitation to you, listener.
Exactly.
What do you want to create?
And who do you want to honor? Start with the very basic. Is there someone around you? Is there the earth? Is there a species? Is there a favorite singer? Or, you know, for example, I've had David Bowie on my ofrenda.
Oh, yeah. I David Bowie is like the key, he's such a, I have a photo of him as a saint. Mm-hmm. He was not a saint. I mean,
no,
he
the
did
ones
bad
on
things
candles,
too.
Yeah.
But yeah, like the saint, him as the saint on the candle. Ah, oh, David Bowie.
Actually, I used to work for David Bowie in London. And at one point he was going to come, or we had asked for him to come and speak here in San Miguel for the TEDx event or something. And that was when we got word that he was no longer flying. And then I remember the day that he died, there was an instant ofrenda on my behalf for him. And having this connection that is at once personal, but also transpersonal, in honoring, you know, this is an element of your life, or maybe you're one of your heroes. There was an ofrenda when I first got here for Steve Jobs in the middle of a jardin, like the middle of our town square. One of the kids that set up the ofrenda, I guess, was a techie. And there was this beautiful hand-painted flower thing in the jardin that was an homage to Steve Jobs. So
I remember when David Bowie died, and it was the most outpouring that I've ever experienced from people who'd never met him because of the way that he made people feel comfortable being weird. He had an interesting gift of making weird cool in a way that really touched a lot of the... I'm a weird kid who grew up and realized that these, you know, what I thought I wanted to push away are actually my treasures and my gifts. And many of the people I surround myself with are that way. And I felt a deep... I felt his loss. I felt his death. I felt an honoring of him. And so it's interesting to bring up David Bowie as he seems so relevant in this context to me, because he is the person who I've never met whose death has affected me most deeply. This podcast will be released tomorrow, which is the 31st, Halloween. Day of the Dead is November the 2nd.
November the 1st is the day that we celebrate the children. And then the next day is the souls, the Feast of All Saints, Feast of All Souls. So the next day, this November the 2nd, is the actual for the adults.
So I invite you, if you're listening, to create an ofrenda of your own. And whether you have someone you want to honor, or you just want to feel close to your own mortality, that's what this holiday is all about. That's what this festival, La Calaca, is all about. And Claudia, that's become much of what your life is all about. And I honor you for bringing this to our awareness and creating these hybrids and bringing people to San Miguel, bringing myself to San Miguel. Thank you so much. And thank you for everything you've created here.
And thank you. Thank you very much. Bye, everybody.
A beautiful face I have seen in this place. What a beautiful face I have seen in this place that is circling all round the sun. And one day we will die, and our ashes will fly from the aeroplane over the sea. But for now we are young, let us lie in the sun and count every beautiful thing we can see. I can't believe how strange it is. I can't believe.
How'd the podcast go?
Wow, what a magical timing it was between us. I'm so happy to have shared this moment with you. It's been really relevant to be here one-on-one, present together.
For the listener, we did a remote version of this when Claudia was in Tokyo, actually. And the conversation was beautiful. I was actually in New Mexico with my aunt, who is saying goodbye to her. You know, I've never said goodbye to someone before. And so it was very poignant. It was a very alive conversation, but the audio wasn't quite good, and it just didn't fully land. So I'd made the choice to come down to San Miguel to have this conversation in person.
And thank you as well, not just for being here, but having such a reflective and deep conversation with yourself about death and wanting to seek where you personally stand on this. I think it's really beautiful to watch.
Oh, that's very sweet of you to say. Death is psychedelic. The most
psychedelic.
Some people,
for sure.
Some people say the pineal gland releases DMT at the moment of your death. I don't know what that means, but you know, it is the greatest transformation that could possibly happen. No matter what you believe, you transform into. Even if you are just think it, the lights go out, it's still the most profound transformation of your life. And it just seems so tragic to me that our culture sees so much negativity in that. Of course there's loss, profound loss, deep, deep loss. And especially if someone leaves through suicide or through drugs or through, you know, profound loss. And yet, I ascribe to an idea of consciousness that the brain is a reducing valve of consciousness. And when the brain goes, that consciousness expands out of how it had been held in this body. That's my belief. That's how I view the world. Regardless of what actually happens, it's an adventure. So why not let death be a festival as well?
Death is a festival.
And one day I will die. Laughing out loud from the clouds. Yes, I'll be laughing with everyone I know. 'Cause I can't believe how strange it is. I can't believe how strange it is. How strange. How strange it is. How strange it is to be anything at all. nothing. Nothing to call my own.
I hope some good looks.
Nothing. Nothing to tie me down.
Thank you.